everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. I'm here with Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, gang.
Hey.
Hello.
I'm doing it instantly this time, so I don't forget like last time. But we're here to talk about an episode that's apparently a part one, which blindsided me after watching it. I had no idea this was a part one. I don't know what's a part one of, but should we just get into it, or is there anything we need to lead with? Like, the title is a guy. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They did it. Slowbeef reminded us right before we started recording that last time they did a part one was in Asylum, and they also, it was a real person that they decided to make a part one and two about, but that was Anne Frank. This isn't, like, as distasteful. It's still, like, not great.
It's not
what
great,
they do,
yeah.
But, like, it's not as distasteful as saying you have Anne Frank as a character in your show.
It's not as shitty as, hey, real person, you get to be a character in my subpar horror story. It angers me on a different level, on, like, a poor, like, plot level, but not so much, like, ooh, to the memory of Edward Mordrake or anything like that, you know. Spoilers,
yeah.
I guess.
The titular Edward Mordrake part one, our part one also. We'll get to old Ed here in a bit. We open on a museum, the Museum of Medical Morbidities, and I guess the owner, who is also the tour guide. I've only ever seen, like, Zach Bagans do that, which is, this lady could basically be like Zach Bagans in 1952 or whatever, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And she's given everybody a tour of just her, like, museum of people who have physical differences. Throughout history.
This is, like, a weirdly odd, like, how do I put it? This is a take on, there's a real museum like this that I've been to called the Mütter Museum in Philadelphia.
The Mütter Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty famous.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. This seems like a crappy take on it, like, as if to say, like, look how exploitative and terrible this museum. I don't know. It's, like, a bad version of it. Like,
I feel like the Mütter Museum, if I remember correctly, I haven't visited personally, but it's, like, fairly respectful and treats it as, like, medical stuff, right? It's just, like, here's what happened, here's how it presented, and, like, here's what it, like, it's, like, a thing for doctors to look at, as opposed to a freak show,
right.
For example.
Yeah. Like, it takes public admission, like, of course, but, like, yeah, it's nothing, like, I don't think it's anything, like, particularly distasteful or anything like that, but it gets a weird treatment, I think, in this. But
they're, like, acting like it's, like, a bunch of weird rich British people doing, like, backroom deals and, like, auctioning and being like, how much for the two skulls that are combined? Oh, it's not worth a dollar. Like, it's like, what is this? As opposed to, like, some doctors being like, wow, that's a really fascinating spinal condition.
I feel like it's something like where, like, they told Ryan Murphy, like, I'm sorry, you can't film here. He's like, I'll show you. You know, but
I'm going to do it anyway, but I'm going to call it something different and I'm going to make it look worse. I'm going to make you look bad. Here's my weird fucked up. I'm going to make a weird fucked up museum. Then we are introduced to, after the tour concludes, she says some shit about the tour guide / owner of the museum, I suppose, says some shit about how Halloween is great, because it's when people with physical differences get to wear masks in public.
Oh, yeah, right?
And I'm like, what? First of all, what the fuck? Oh, by the way, because it's not
is
obvious.
That good?
Yeah, is that good?
is that good? Like, I'm sorry, I'm a little, I'm still, like, hung up on this. Is that good? Do we want that?
Do they like this? Do the people with the differences enjoy doing this?
I'm looking at a crowd full of people with disabilities and turning a knob up and down that says masks and going like, ah?
Oh my god, yeah. In case it's not obvious from that statement alone, oh boy, am I gonna have a field day, because this is their fucking Halloween episode! There's one every season, baby! And it's Halloween. And I say this because if you've ever watched the movie Halloween from 1973, I think is the year it came out. I don't know. Either way,
like that,
John Carpenter's Halloween movie, they are going to rip off so much from the movie Halloween in this episode that even the Amazon like blurb that pops up over the episode was like, okay, listen, we can't pretend they're not just straight up ripping off the scenes from Halloween in this episode.
I've never seen it, so I am excited to see how much of the things that I was just confused by, the answer is, oh, that's a scene from Halloween. Because there were a couple parts where I was like, why are we doing this? And I have a feeling the answer is, it's from a better movie.
Yeah. And it's like, the thing is, Amazon had to come up with that blurb and be like, oh, these were very clearly inspired by the movie Halloween, because they don't acknowledge it at all. And in case you're wondering, like, they don't do it in a way where you're like, oh, okay, that's clearly an homage to Halloween. It's no, they know that people liked that scene, so they have unrelated characters that are not even a little bit associated with a Michael Myers type do the things Michael Myers did without acknowledging
that's
what it is.
Is that why Twisty's just standing there?
You got it.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Exactly why.
I hate this game, bro. I hate this game.
Yeah, it's so cool. And what's so funny is, like, the first scene when we get there, when it happened, I was like, bro, we get it. We've all seen Halloween. Because it's so clearly a ripoff of that scene. And
which,
then,
as someone who hasn't seen Halloween, it was great to just be like, what the fuck is Twisty doing?
And then when the second one happened, I'm like, okay, motherfucker. Like, you're all right. One time was a coincidence. Twice, you're definitely doing this on purpose. Anyway, it's Halloween, I guess. We'll get a title card here in a second that is insanely wordy, but we'll know exactly what time of day during Halloween and when and where. But back to the museum, we are introduced to our like two new named characters, and this is going to be confusing. So these characters are Stanley and Maggie, Dennis O'Leary, who's Spaulding, and Emma Roberts, who was oh my God, what is her name?
Madison
Montgomery. Mm-hmm. They're going to have different names later.
I think they have a different name now, and that alias I think we could probably skip because it's unnecessarily, you know what I mean? Like, that's just like, yeah, what? I don't need this, you know?
Yeah, like the TLDR of their deal is that they're scam artists, essentially. That's like their
gimmick. They're trying to sell a cryptozoological find, and it is baloney. It is just like, hey, this is a baby Sasquatch. No, that's a goat with a cat jaw on it. Oh,
is
okay.
So
get out of my office.
Tim check. Is a Sasquatch a medical morbidity?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. No. And also, I will also say a Sasquatch, even a baby one, I would say is nothing akin to the shape of a goat with a cat's jaw on it. That just isn't anything. That doesn't make sense. That's not a shape that makes... Think about that. A goat is long. A cat is less long.
Do you think they meant like El Chupacabra, but like they forgot what that monster was called? So they were like, Sasquatch.
Almost certainly.
They're like, it's a Sasquatch.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Or the one thing they actually gave a shit about timeline, because people always forget the Chupacabra, it was actually like created during our lifetime. Like it's really recent. It's really recent.
They're scam artists, and then just to make sure you hate them, they have this line that I think is totally nonsense. Because it starts out with the Halloween room, then it goes to like, yeah, Stanley and Maggie. And they're looking at some, like, I think it's the body of a deformed person or something, or a picture, but they see, like, somebody with, like, a physical deformity. And Stanley's, like, just, like, out of nowhere, just, like, these people are totally useless in real life, but at least in the museum they have some value. Which is, like, what the, like, why are you so hateful to, like, people with disability? Like, what? Like, but that's never explained. He's just a villain, and we need you to know he's really bad.
Yeah, and, like, Maggie is, like, even from this scene is, like, she's obviously, like, his accomplice or whatever, but she's not, like, as malicious as he is, because I think what prompts him to say that is she says something to the effect of, like, all these poor people who, like, had such a hard life and then died and now they're going to be ogled at for money for the rest of eternity. Like, she's being very sympathetic towards all of the exhibits, and he's like, Nope.
Fuck that.
Yeah. I'm here to be evil.
I hate these fucks. Are you kidding? My God.
This show loves evil gays. I don't know why. They, like, they're
I
like,
wish
yeah.
I could have killed a little guy named Meep. I'd feel great about that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. Actually, though.
So, obviously, like, the way that the, like, them being kind of BTFO'd about their fake Sasquatch is he's like, he walks in and he's talking to the exhibit owner lady and he's like, did you have your Pawn Stars guy evaluate the price of this baby Sasquatch? And the Pawn Stars guy comes in and is like, this is a goat, blah 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 blah, and then he storms off and he's like, take your goat with you. And then, like, before they leave, very confusingly, the owner / curator is like, hey, before you go, listen, I know I have, like, a guy who, like, checks to see if this shit is real, but, like, if you bring me something that's, like, pretty cool, I'm not gonna look into it all that much, but it's gotta be, like, really cool. Like, why do you have the Pawn Stars guy then? Just let them put the fake shit in the museum. Who
right?
gives it?
Yeah. Like, seriously.
What is the Pawn Stars guy doing here? If you're just going to take whatever. Because, like, I'm not Look, doing a bit when I say that. She's like, it's got to be cool, though. You got to bring me something really
yeah.
cool.
We haven't really been pulling in the eyes like we have been recently. And I think we might have run out of cool stuff that's real. So if you could bring me some, like, really cool shit, we'll talk about it.
Even our regulars aren't really coming back. Like, who is that for? Like, you know, like, ah. Oh,
no. Our regulars. What, do you have a fucking bar in there?
And so they're gonna hatch this plan because they're gonna see a liver from a set of conjoined twins, which, by the way, those fun trivia fact, she says, she being the owner of the museum, says that those are from the Siamese twins, who I actually mentioned several episodes ago as being the one that they had to figure out if you could go to jail for being a conjoined twin who did a crime. Well, attached to one that didn't. It's those guys. That's who they were talking about, which is weird that they said that was their liver instead of just being like, that's the liver of some conjoined twins. What I'm saying is they're very famous, like a very famous example of conjoined twins. So
famous liver.
Yeah, famous liver. And when Stanley asks how much it costs, she says $5,000. So keep in mind, those were, like, the most famous conjoined twins there are. That's the whole reason that the term Siamese twins exists, is because of these yeah. guys. They're probably, like, the most famous conjoined twins, period. Which is why their liver cost $5,000. That is to say yeah. that just another pair of conjoined twins, probably uh-huh. not as expensive or worth as much money. I'm just throwing that out there. Who could say whether it will be yeah. relevant later?
It's one of those things where, like, in a real collector's market, which is what I would presume this is, taking the available stock from one that has, like, a story and attachment and historical value to two, but the second one is just another one of those. That's, like, not as much of a value add as you'd be hoping, I think.
Yeah, it's like, big thing. It's like
unless
yeah.
these twins also go for murder and Ooh. Trying to murder each other, in which case, mm-hmm. now this is a valuable liver we're going to get, perhaps.
Maybe. So just keep that in mind. Keep that tucked away in your little mind palaces for a while. And then,
God, not only do you have to trick these idiots into giving you their organs, you have to trick them into doing drama beforehand. This is a nightmare. This is a heist worth doing.
I would argue that starting from this point onward, none of this heist is worth doing if you think about it, like, pragmatically. No. Yeah, because Stanley's like, oh, we got to go to a freak show. We got to get some freaks. We got to get a freak. And I'm like, at this point, it's pretty clear what his plan is, right? Like, there's not really a way to misinterpret it, even based on, like, that alone. Yet somehow, Maggie, in, like, a little while, will be confused about what his plan was once it has been put into motion. But he's like, there's only like two freak shows left, one in Coney Island and one in Florida. I don't know why I'm doing this voice for him. That's not what he sounds like.
Right, yeah.
it's my generic man, evil man voice.
It works. That's fine.
Every evil man is from Long Island. So he's like, it's cold in Coney Island. We're going to go to Florida. Ta-da, that's the intro to those characters.
Great.
We'll see them in a little while. Intro plays. It sucks. Now we get the really long, wordy title card that tells us exactly
Halloween,
what's happening.
Comma, yeah. Halloween, comma, 1952, comma, 4 p.m., comma, West Palm Beach, Florida. A little rainy, light drizzle, overcast for most of the day. Wind roughly 11 miles an hour northeast. Yeah, it's like so many details compared to the usual. It's unbelievable.
It's so many details, and like they're details that don't really matter for what this scene is. This is like a nothing scene. You know what? I could look it up, but we're already recording. Maybe this is another Halloween ripoff thing, too, because they might do a title card like this in Halloween, and I just forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Like Haddonfield, Illinois, Halloween, whatever year, whatever PM. They might do that in Halloween. That may be why it's this way.
Well, we gotta get down to the worst parent of the year award, because hot dog, do we have a real fail mom?
Sorry, just really quick, I looked it up. Haddonfield, Illinois, Halloween night, 1963. Yep. So yeah,
hell yeah.
Oh brother.
Two title cards. Yeah.
Was it a stylistic choice? No, it was theft.
That's so cool. I love this show. All right, worst mom time. There's two moms, and they're watching their kids trick-or-treating at 4 p.m.
Oh, my God.
Reminding everyone, it's 4 p.m. The title card said so. And one of the kids, this little girl, little blonde girl, is freaking out because there's a kid dressed as a clown. That ends up being her brother. And then one of the moms is like, hey, your kid really seems to fucking hate clowns. And the other mom's like, yeah, she is horrified of clowns, and that is exactly what my son decided to dress as. And I'm like, you probably could have told him not to do that. Yeah. Right, you probably chose his costume, right?
What was this written by someone who didn't have a sibling? Because like this kind of thing comes up all the time. Like my sister and I are 6 years apart. We're not even like particularly close siblings, and we still had shit we butted heads over like this. Where yeah, like if I was like, hey, I want to dress up as the thing my sister's afraid of, and just like, or the other way around because she's older, my parents would be like, no, yeah, you lunatic, no. What are you talking about?
Absolutely. Even if you were a terrible parent, like you're just setting yourself up for the worst Halloween adventure that you've ever been on, where one kid's complaining the whole time or running away or so, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work at all, but whatever.
I like when one of my children is very upset and the other one kind of isn't invested at all.
Right.
That's my ideal. Yeah. That's my ideal family, my familial outing. The moms are like whining at each other for like no reason. I guess it was the 50s. They didn't have anything else to do besides like, I don't know, make Jell-O molds and complain. And they're like, there's too many kids this year. And then the other one's like, all the kids are here from Jupiter because there's a curfew in Jupiter. So no trick or treating. And I'm like, but your kids are out right now at 4 p.m. Why can't the kids in Jupiter do the trick-or-treating in Jupiter at 4 p.m. when it's still daytime? And then, because now they're doing it at 4 p.m. in a different town, and now they have to commute back probably after the curfew. So, like, why did they come here? That doesn't make any fucking sense. We just needed another location that Twisty could be hanging out at, and that's Palm Beach.
Maybe that was their way of reminding you, like, from last week, like, don't forget, there's a curfew, maybe, but it totally doesn't work. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Who cares about this fucking curfew? Oh, my God. I've never heard a plot point be brought up more times that is, like, so easily overcome by anyone thinking for a second. It's brutal, man. I'm like, I don't care about the curfew. Oh, my God, no one will come to our show. No one's coming to your your show anyway. You had two people show up and you were like, roll out the red carpet, boys. Get out of here.
Jesus Christ. It's going to be relevant for all of 7 seconds later in the episode. So we got to remind you. It's not even really that important, but it will be mentioned in a kind of relevant way for like 7 seconds later. It's 4 p.m. and all the kids are in this town trick-or-treating, whatever. The little girl who hates clowns looks over and we get this is the scene that I first started tweaking on. It's the scene of Michael Myers standing behind the shrub. The very first time Laurie Strode sees Michael Myers in the movie Halloween, like one of the most iconic shots in horror cinema, probably period, ever. It was such a recognizable shot that when I saw the aspect ratio and the way they had Twisty standing to the side of this shrub, I'm like, hey, motherfuckers, we've all seen Halloween. We get it. All right. We've all seen Halloween. Yeah.
And I can say, as the motherfucker who hadn't seen Halloween, this is wildly out of place and makes no sense in context in the show. It just seems like, if you don't know the reference, this is just wild. It's just like, yeah, I don't know, Twisty drove a town over and just stood by some hedges. Why?
I don't know, he likes it or something. And then when the mom, or when the little girl is like, Mom, there's a fucked up clown, it's so scary. Of course, the moms are going to look and there's no one there. Just like in Halloween. And then...
Wow, I forgot that part.
The mom says some insanely funny shit. The part I love is she turns to her small daughter and goes, yeah, it's Halloween. There's going to be clowns everywhere. Which immediately made me think, like, is this lady my mom who, like, sees a ghost and, like, processes it and says clown out loud? Because there aren't clowns everywhere on Halloween. Like, the clown up rate isn't that high on Halloween, right? Like maybe one here or there, but it's not like a witch or a mummy or a Frankenstein, right, yeah, or something. Yeah, like clown isn't like a top 10 outfit. People wear clown outfit any time of year, frankly.
And kids don't typically like clowns. They're treating this little girl like she's fucking insane. But like most kids don't like clowns.
No.
Was this maybe before the movie that made people aware they were scared of clowns?
Pennywise?
Wasn't that like a thing?
Or like It? Are you talking about It?
I'm thinking like one of the movies was the first, like either the movie or the book was like the first thing that really established in the public consciousness that like clowns are scary. And like before that, it was like, yeah, everyone's like pretty chill with clowns.
I mean,
then again, Twisty's like pretty obviously not a good clown.
No, he's a rough clown. There's something off about it. Yeah.
What's the history of coulrophobia? We probably don't have time for that, do we?
Yeah. No, I think people were probably... I mean, it was not out in 1952 when this is set.
Yeah.
But, like, ooh, people didn't have, like, probably mostly an opinion at all. John Wayne Gacy also didn't do a lot of favors to the clown rep.
Oh, right. Yeah. That was bad for clowns.
Yeah, clowns really took a big PR hit with John Wayne Gacy, unfortunately.
Ooh. Yeah, huge L for the clown lobby.
And then just kind of skyrocketed from there. Then there's like killer clowns from outer space, but those are technically aliens, but they are clowns. It's a whole deal. But yeah, like clowns, and I mean, the movie Freaks that we keep referencing, like doesn't have like outright clowns in it, but that was from like a long time ago, like when we were first doing
movies.
It's
not like an evil circus, kind of.
Kind of.
Right? Kind of?
More like the season of American Horror Story, but worse and older. yeah, so the mom is like, yeah, there's going to be fucking clowns everywhere. Also, I don't know why my kid hates clowns. I love clowns. I think they kick ass. And I'm like, what a funny thing for a mom to say to their kid.
Skill gap in my kid.
Yeah, built different. I love clowns, actually. I mean, like, I am like that because I don't think clowns are scary. So when people around me, like my biological mom is like, I hate clowns. I'm scared of clowns. I'm like, that's crazy. I think they're little guys. I think they're fine, probably.
For the record, I just looked at Wikipedia quick, and it looks like Gacy is probably the origin of, like, coulrophobia or what have you.
Damn,
you know,
he really did fuck it up for clowns, huh? He really did a huge number.
When was that?
That was like the 80s, I think. I closed the thing. Let me see. Gacy.
Okay, so maybe it would be weird for this kid to be scared of clowns.
I cannot believe also, that he did such damage to it.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I thought colorophobia is like weirdly recent too. It's like the chupacabra, colorophobia, all sorts of things.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That is so funny. I really thought Pennywise would have been probably okay. Thanks, John Wayne Gacy. You really fucked it up for clowns everywhere.
Idiot.
Really beefed this. So that means Twisty's kind of ahead of the curve then, because he's in 1952. Yeah. He was the murder clown before John Wayne Gacy.
Was always saying that.
Yeah. I'm always blazing paths, this Twisty the clown. So that's the end of that scene. It'll be relevant later, kind of, in a really funny way. And now it's time for Ethel to go to the doctor's office. Kathy Bates, the bearded lady, to go to the doctor's office. She goes to the doctor's office. They have a doctor's appointment. And she has cirrhosis of the liver. And her doctor is like, you might as well pack it up. Don't eat meat or drink alcohol. You have 6 to 12 months to live. I'm really paraphrasing because this scene goes on for quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
It's so odd, yeah.
He's really...
instead of wasting your time with this, here's some examples of words that Kathy Bates says in impossible-to-understand ways. Oh, he went meade. Like, that was one that really messed me up. He's out there commanding him. That one screwed me up. When she was talking later on about a guy smiling, I think she says he was smiling. It's really brutal.
She really so just, chews on the know, syllables it, sometimes, doesn't she? Just like really chews them up.
Yeah, and like picks random like long syllables to make short, and like vice versa. But like not in a way that I think anyone does anywhere in the world.
Yeah, no, it's not helpful. It's not. It doesn't. I don't like. There's nothing to like about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, what are we doing here, Kathy Bates? Like, I can't really understand you anymore.
And like, why? And, why can't it just be Kathy Bates talking? Why do they always have to give her an accent? Do you think she does it and they just can't stop her?
I guess, you know, probably the closest.
And yeah, long story short, she has really severe cirrhosis. This scene is just to make it so there's an impetus for her to stop drinking that we, the audience, maybe have a chance of caring about. Because otherwise it's like, yeah, whatever, she's a drunk little lady, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
It's also a very odd thing where, like, she's like, you're the first doctor who's ever shown me kindness, you know, and... And
that was so dead on. I fucking hate that. That was good. That's the worst part. That was like super good.
Yeah. And she's like, this is what's, it almost reads like a bit because like the scene is actually quite touching and like she's crying and like it's Kathy Bates. So she's doing a great job of like acting. You cannot fucking understand a word she's saying. So imagine just like the most touching scene that you've seen in American Horror Story so far, or this season rather, but it's being acted out by Boomhauer from King of the Hill, and you have no idea what is being said, and that's where we set up this episode, and now we're back at the circus. And I'm assuming it's later because it's darker outside. Kind of. It'll go from being night and day several times before this episode is over. But this is a linear episode, which makes the pacing very confusing. Right now it's dark, which again is very confusing because it's like 4 p.m. And also it will be daytime again in just a few minutes. And everyone's doing, I don't know, hooting and hollering and Halloween associated activities. There's like bobbing for apples and stuff, kind of. But
they're like having festivities. It's not like a normal Halloween party other than like bobbing for apples, which is like a kind of antiquated thing. But I've seen it once or twice. Mm-hmm. So like that. But everything else is more just like general merriment. It's like more like a banquet at a Ren fair,
which we've seen they do at every meal, so that's why I'm a little confused, because they do this for every meal. So the only thing that makes it different for Halloween is that they are now bobbing for apples and there are some pumpkins around the table and the area. They seem to be having a blast, though. And Paul the Illustrated Seal, which I think I called Paul the Laminated Seal in the last episode, which is not correct, but it is funnier. he makes a... You know, honestly, it's like, it's super ableist, but it is a little bit funny. And it is coming from Paul the Illustrated Seal.
Yeah.
Makes a kind of funny
call. Yeah,
Paul
gets this one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul's like, hey, conjoined twins, you should do bobbing for apples. You have a natural advantage at bobbing for apples. And I'm like, you know what? He makes a good point. He's got solid logic here. You do have twice the amount of heads to do bobbing for apples. You are uniquely equipped for this. They're not into it though. They don't want to bob for apples. For some reason, it is only this scene, and I can't even explain like what exactly it is about it. But like this scene where it's just the picture, basically a still shot of the two, the twins in the dead center of the frame with nothing else really happening around them, is the worst that the CGI for Sarah Paulson has looked so far. I don't know what happened. Yep. It's almost like they had to do like a retake of part of the scene, but they couldn't get it from one of the like character perspectives. So they had to cut two different cuts of Sarah Paulson doing that scene from like a different day, and they just couldn't quite get it one to one because it was shot on different days or something. It just looks off, and I can't really. She doesn't look like she's CGI most of the time, but she very looks like she's CGI in this scene, in a really distracting, like really off-putting way. But yeah, I don't know what happened here. There will be another editing thing later that will also be pretty egregious, but we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, and one of them just gives a quick like, "Oh, we just cleaned our hair, haha, no." And then the other one, I believe, starts to get mad and is like, "Hey, Jimmy's really..." Oh no! First, they think internally like, "Ugh, can't believe they're like this." And then Jimmy like walks in and is like, little Cole's chimney sweep ass looking ass walking in with a shovel being like, "Hey, you know how it was. I was digging a little grave for me."
And like, fucking meep.
Fucking meep ruining another good time for everyone. And so like, yeah, he's like, "I'm digging a grave for meep." And he claims they're a... Meep was a child, right? He's just like, "Meep was just a kid," which
He says child specifically, because I feel like kid can be used for like an adult person. Like, "Hey, get out of here, kid," and it's just like a young adult.
Yeah, yeah.
He says which is a very specific term to use for somebody.
You're right, yeah.
Citation fucking needed on him being a child. Fucking meep.
So glad he's dead. Anyway.
Yeah, makes an offhand statement that they're all children, which... No?
Yeah.
I don't think there are any children, actually, in this particular circus. I don't think any of them are children.
One of those fucking ladies is over 6'2". Don't spit in my face and tell me it's raining. That's an adult woman.
Jimmy, you like moonlight as somebody who like finger bangs like people. Like, you know, like,
we're all just children here
about
on God's earth as I finger 400 housewives with my lobster fingers. All of God's specialist creations.
I'm so innocent.
It sounds like that too. He sounds exactly like that when he says it.
Exactly. One of God's own children. "Hey, I can feel your ovaries." It's like it's Jimmy.
Then Sirius Twin decides to yell at everyone because, like, how dare you have dinner? Meep died. What about that? And like, Meep would have been like, "Nah, it's cool. Rock on, Wayne." I think. I believe.
If I know Meep, like, I think I do, yeah.
And I don't. I think Meep wants us to have a good time, and that's the best we all can hope for. And if not, fuck Meep.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, now it's time for the crux of the episode. So Ethel comes in while they're all honking about Meep and whether or not they should be like doing stuff. Because basically Dot, the Sirius twin, is like, Well, we need to practice. We got to be better at singing for, like, we got to get ready to perform. And the other, like, the...
Meep would want us to succeed, damn it. Yeah. Meep wants to get this startup off the ground.
She says something like, we should dedicate tonight's performance to Meep. And everyone's like, we're not fucking performing tonight. It's Halloween. And she's like, whoa, what? And then Ethel comes in and is like, yeah, you fucking idiot. We obviously don't fucking perform on Halloween, because if we do, a fucked up ghost named Edward Mordrake from the 1800s will come murder us. Obviously, you fucking buffoon. this is common sense, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this will introduce, I'm going to say, a character. That will be the character of the next two episodes, allegedly. That's what the show would like us to be treating it as. Edward Mordrake was a real guy, by the way. They're treating him like a weird Bloody Mary situation. He is a real person, was a real person who had the condition we're about to talk about. And then because he had this condition, there was also subsequently an urban legend about him that is not the one they are going to say in this show. So, like,
right.
A, Edward Mordrake, real guy. B, Edward Mordrake, a
just
fucked up story
up
about a real
new
guy.
Guy. Yep. Just make a new guy. If you're going to make a new story, just make a new guy.
A movie came out not that long ago that literally just used this as a premise, and they just made a new character for it. The name is a reference to the Edward Mordrake story, but like they just made a new guy. That's, you can do that when you're making a fiction movie. That's the thing, is you're allowed to. Not American Horror Story though. Yeah, three layers deep. A real man who had an urban legend, which they didn't use in this show, but they will do their own version of. So three layers deep on this poor real man. And then we get like a flashback of in black and white of a really hot guy. And I only bring that up because that is also part of the urban legend, is that he was very hot. And he's like sad and he's playing piano. And Ethel's like,
he's a talented, fancy noble who knows how to do all of the talented, fancy noble things is like a big part of his lore as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. He can play the piano real good. That's important.
He can dance good. He's charming. That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right. And then it reveals that he has a face on the back of his head that was super icky looking and like really fucked up. And it whispered nasty, things.
It's not that fucked up looking.
No, it's just his
scene.
Face.
I'm pretty sure
it's just his face that they like green screened onto the back of his head also, but like a little squished, a little scrunkly. It's not that bad. In the actual urban legend, it's a lady's face who's actually quite beautiful. I don't know why they changed it to this. I guess because they didn't want to find another lady to graft onto the back of this guy's face or head. I mean, because that means they'd have to pay another actor, and I don't think they wanted to do that. So
normally we just put Sarah Paulson's face in two places, but we already used that one this season, so like.
We're losing a mint on this all these computer graphics already, okay? So, cut us some slack here, folks. American Horror Story.
And so he's got a head, or a face in the back of his head that's, like, real mean to him and says fucked up shit to him. And it drove him crazy.
And no one else can hear it.
Yeah. So, like, this is where they start to deviate from the actual, like, urban legend, quote-unquote, of Edward Mordrake. They're like, he went crazy and got put in an asylum. That never happened. In the urban legend, he killed himself. But this one went crazy and like went to the asylum and then like escaped by killing the staff. And then he went to a freak show because he thought that's where he should live. And he had a great fucking time at the freak show because he was around other people who were like different like him. But then one day the head on the back of his head was just too rude and nasty.
They ask explicitly, like, oh, was he finally happy there? And to which Ethel says, no, because he wasn't like everyone there. Like, he thought he was, but he was, like, super high society and nobility, so, like, he couldn't fit in with everyone. Like, because when he was performing, he was, like, playing piano and doing the fancy stuff, and people were like pretty excited and up on that of just him being generically good at that. And then he took off his hat and showed his terrible face, and then they would, you know, scream and yell and all that. And he hated that kind of stuff.
Yeah, which is, again, not related. That's not even part of the fake story about Edward Mordrake. It feels a little mean-spirited, because what happens next is he gets angry and on Halloween snaps and kills all of the other freaks at the freak show for some reason, and then killed himself.
And then hangs himself,
And then that's why they don't perform on Halloween, because Dot's like, oh, so you don't perform out of respect for that guy. That makes sense. And then they're like, no, we'll perform on Halloween, because if we do, he'll show up and drag us to hell.
And stupid.
That's their version. And like, it feels a little mean-spirited, because like I said, the real guy, he just killed himself, I think, or he died.
Yeah, he
and
did. Like 22, 23,
yeah. And then in the urban legend, he kills himself because of like constantly having to deal with this like weird lady on the back of his head who's like always being really mean to him. So he's just like a both the fake and the real version in reality is like a very tragic story of a guy who like had like not a great life. It's kind of feels mean-spirited to be like, actually what happened was he went crazy and killed a bunch of people because they were not rich and smart and talented like he was.
The face on the back of his head was actually the devil talking to him and telling him hellish whispers all day and night. Like, what? Why?
Yeah, it feels a bit mean-spirited, but weirdly not the worst. Believe me, this is not me giving it kudos, but it's weirdly not the worst interpretation of a real person that American Horror Story has done. It's not good, but it's not the worst one, surprisingly.
Charles Manson was alive.
Yeah.
So everyone just mentions so we don't perform on that day, because if you do, he'll show up and take you to hell with him or whatever. To which they go, yeah, baloney, bullshit, stupid, dumb. And Ethel goes, no, when I was performing with Barnum, we did it. They made us perform on Halloween. And the next morning, a little guy who was like 3'11" had hung himself in his trailer because we performed on Halloween. And that was, he was killed, which, sure. This is where she says, and it says his face was found and he had the devil's smiling. He was smiling. And I'm just like, what is this accent? Where does smiling come from?
Devil's smile. And
smile.
Smiling.
Chewing on those syllables. Just chewing on them. And then Ethel's drinking the whole time this is happening, by the way, because we're supposed to care that she's drinking now.
I'm so disappointed in you, Ethel.
Yeah, because the doctor just said that she wasn't supposed to, which later in this episode, she's going to be like, I don't want to die yet. I have so much to do. But I'm like, you're doing the one thing he said not to do that would make you die faster. Why are you doing that? She's drinking, and Jimmy's like, hey, what the fuck? Why are you drinking? You haven't done that in a long time. And he's like, is it because of Del? Because, well, believe me, I know, Del fucking sucks. And she's like, no, I'm glad Del's here. You should leave, actually. This makes no sense and isn't relevant to anything she does later.
She claims, I know you want to leave, so just leave. And Jimmy's like, I'm the hero of the people. That's my whole deal. Did you not get that? I'm the protagonist here. I got four fingers and all the spirit to carry everybody to the Super Bowl, baby. Let's go. I'm Jimmy.
It's me, Jimmy Darling. That's why they call me Jimmy Darling. That's not my name. You know who is who is actually Darling, though? And we haven't checked in with him in a while. It's now Halloween.
Dandy.
It's Dandy time, and we're at the Mott house.
Dandy time.
Gloria calls in Dora, the housekeeper, to like help her set up decorations, which I forgot to mention in the last fucking episode. Dora is Patti LaBelle. How they got Patti LaBelle to play this specific role, beyond me. Why do I say that? because Dora walks in dressed as Woody the Woodpecker.
It's so funny.
Yeah. How they got Patti LaBelle, like the queen of soul music, to do this.
She probably thought it was funny.
Yeah, honestly. She's dressed like that because, as Gloria will say, like, it's Dandy's favorite cartoon. And then she makes Gloria do the Woody the Woodpecker noise, and Patti LaBelle's kind of cracked at doing the Woody the Woodpecker noise, I'm not gonna lie.
Got that range, got that vocal range. Yeah.
She kind of fucking kills it. But Gloria is not impressed. Dandy wakes up from his nap and wanders in, and I'm like, hell yeah, brother, wish that was me.
Yeah.
Wanders in, and he's like, I'm so excited to go. He doesn't talk like this, but he might. He seems like he should. Yeah.
I'm excited to go out,
trick
mother.
Or treat. Yeah, he's very mother. Little lad berries and cream vibes all the time. He wants to go trick or treating so bad. He's so excited for it. And then Gloria's like, we can't because there's a curfew. And he goes, curfews
are for the
poor,
mother.
And then Dora's like, bring out his costume. Or Gloria's like, Dora, bring out his costume. I'm like, why'd you make him a costume if he can't go trick-or-treating?
Right?
Yeah. Well, that's why when she mentions them staying in, she explicitly says, and it's so funny because it's literally only because of what you're saying right now. She says, oh, we'll have our own time. We'll have a costume contest. And, like, they explicitly have to state that because otherwise they realized probably while they were writing it, fuck, why would she tell him to not go trick-or-treating and then give him a costume? That doesn't make a damn lick of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, I worked with Dora for months on this. It's right up your alley. And it's very not. When he sees it, he fucking hates it. So I'm not sure where she got this idea from. But he like opens it up because it's like wrapped like a present. And it's a Howdy Doody costume. And he promptly goes apeshit about it. Bonkers bananas in a bad way.
It's so fucking funny. He's so mad about Howdy Doody. It's maybe the angriest anyone has ever been about Howdy Doody. But like, for what it's worth...
Yeah,
I don't think Howdy Doody's like up his alley. Like, Howdy Doody is not his thing at all. Doesn't even seem close. Yeah.
I can't believe you've made me side with Dandy, American Horror Story, but I will.
At least
also
once.
Like it, yes. You might. Okay, here's the other thing. You might think, oh, well, maybe Dandy liked it when he was a kid. Howdy Doody started in like 1947.
Yeah.
1948,
yeah.
Somewhere around there. It's like right before the 50s, so probably not if he's like a 20-something year old adult.
No,
know?
No, yeah.
No.
Oh, no, wow. It doesn't work.
He hates it. He's fucking but pissed.
It gives us also one of the funniest lines in American Horror Story history, which is an adult man screaming as angrily as this blessed actor can muster, Howdy Doody.
Yes.
Multiple times, just screaming, Howdy Doody, and getting more and more angry. And it's, oh, it's choice. It's so good. Oh, baby.
It's
got big, the guy in SpongeBob screaming chocolate over and over vibes. It's just like really intense for saying Howdy Doody.
He hates it. And he storms off. And Gloria's like, I'm going to go make you a new costume, and leaves. And Dora.
Dandy.
Yeah. Dandy, I'm going to make you a new costume. I have plenty of time.
It's fine.
And Dora's like, hey, I found the animals you've been like stabbing or whatever. Fuck off. You're a weird little piece of shit. Bye. I'm not making you a new costume or cleaning this up. See you later. And then upstairs later, we see Dandy in either his closet or his mom's closet. I don't know. Cutting up a bunch of clothes to make his own costume. We'll see this costume this episode. He does a pretty good job for a little lad who I assume he has no sewing experience. Pretty solid costume he throws together, honestly.
Yeah.
In this amount of time.
Better than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks pretty good. Now, I know what you have all been waiting for. You've all been thinking, Liz, Are they going to have a funeral for me? They are. Great news. We're here. It's me funeral.
Finally.
What is there to say about Meep? He was Meep. What else can you say about Meep? And so that's what we get to have, is the eulogy where everyone pretends to give a shit about Meep.
It really is that. So big.
Like, legitimately, Jimmy at one point is like, honestly, Meep, better than all of us. It's like, what?
Yes, it absolutely is. It's like, I don't know this character. We haven't done anything with Meep. What do you
honestly, Meep was the pinnacle of humanity, and I wish everyone saw that the same way I did.
How could you not like Meep, you dumb fools?
Every so often on Halloween, Meep would put a chicken's head in kids' candy. I don't know why. That was, I think it's because he thought it was candy. Oh, the best there's ever been.
That little guy loved chicken heads. We should all toss a chicken head into his grave now. And they do. They all do. Each person tosses a chicken head into Meep's grave. I want to know where they're getting all these chickens from, because they were giving him
performance supply.
Oh, okay.
For Meep. Yeah, they got to keep him around, you know. I mean, when you burn through 1 to 3 per show, you know, because what if the crowd fucking loves Meep? Then you got to give him more Meep, and Meep's only got one move.
Yeah.
And he needs a chicken to do it.
Yeah, that's so true.
That's fair.
No, he
it's
has
true.
Two. He can go, Meep. And he also couldn't bite the head off of a chicken. Those are his two.
That's fair.
People aren't going to pay for a weird little guy to say Meep. Not in this economy.
That's absolutely true. No. They gotta step it up, or he's got to step it up. Yeah, and they all toss a chicken head into his grave because it's Meep, everybody's favorite boy. During the funeral, a taxi cab shows up. With Maggie in it. She's going to say that her name is Esmeralda. If I accidentally call her Esmeralda, just know that I know it's her fake name, because her name is Maggie. And she's like, hello, Jimmy darling from Elsa's Freak Show. I'm the mystic Esmeralda, and I'm a fortune teller. I have been given a fake identity, and I have a bunch of stuff in the suitcase to be a fake psychic. Will this be worth the amount of money for the thing that we are trying to do? Almost certainly fucking not. And then Jimmy's like, well, it's hard to argue that you're definitely a psychic. You said you were, and you can't lie about that. So, I guess you're in. I'm going to get you to Elsa. Then everybody buckle in. This is probably going to be the last thing we can manage to talk about this episode, because we're about
brother.
To open Pandora's box, baby.
Oh my god. This is the most impossible thing to reckon with. Like,
yes.
There's like nothing to be said. I'm just going to prep everyone in advance. They are accidentally going to breach a wall of the brain barrier that it like is no longer... Nothing else in this show is nearly as important as the realization we're about to have. Like, this is the thing that actually should be studied, if it is true, is what we're about to witness, and nothing else. Because if someone awake can perceive... Okay, let's talk, because I'm gonna bust it on accident.
Go for it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So... we have a hard cut to the twins on an operating table, and they're getting set up to have a procedure to separate them, which is obviously, you know, going to probably kill Bet in this circumstance. It's like a dream Dot was having, and Bet wakes her up. Okay, so they have a little exchange, and the exchange is basically just Bet having her thing of like, oh, you just want to cut, why do you want to kill me? And, you know, Dot going, well, you don't have any talent. It's me. It's been me the whole time, and I'm the one who deserves, I have a man who wants to marry me and have a kid, and I'm good at singing. and then it cuts to... after like having a Bet having a yell, and like again interacting in the dream, like Bet is an active participant in this dream setting, because it's a dream. Spoilers, this is a dream. And they're both on the operating table, and Bet is having a nightmare, and Dot is having, I guess, what she perceives as a good dream. But Dot's the only one who's actually asleep, because we cut to Bet awake trying to tell Dot to wake up, because, and then Dot complaining that, why would you wake me up? I was having a great dream. To which Bet responds, well, to me it was a nightmare. So is she perceiving two realities at once right now? Is that what's happening? Is she able to, like, perceive and interact in Dot's dream while also being awake and sentient and able to observe the world around?
What happens if they're both dreaming but, like, different things? Do they just bleed together at one point? Or are they
both in both dreams separately? Do they have to experience two everything at the same time whenever? God, because this sounds like a whole thing of, then you have a real incentive to make sure you go to sleep at the same time, which, like, you probably do already if you share a body, right? But, like, even more so if you now have to, like, I think I would throw up if I had to experience, like, being in someone's dream and also in the waking world at the same time. Like, that. Oh, my God. Like, I think my nervous system would start breaking down. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, especially because, like, most people can't really control what they dream about. So, like, what if one's, like, dreaming that, like, the president's getting assassinated, but, like, the other one's, like, watching TV? Like, are they just going to have the worst case of, like, the Mandela effect of all time? Like, they're going to be like, yeah, remember that one time the president died? And they're going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, this opens a lot of threads. It really frays the threads of the plausible deniability of these two having telepathy. Because, like,
also of them being able to have literally any information from each other. Because if there's not a separation, because, like, there's a natural separation between the waking activity of the human brain and the fully, like, REM sleep dreaming activity of the human brain, just in a single person. Like, it's easy to not remember your dreams, even if you're only one person with one brain. So, like, this, is there a chance that, like, Dot woke up and didn't remember the dream, but Bet did? Like, if not that, then are they constantly both always aware of all the information the other one observes, no matter what the state of oh my God. Yeah, like, this story can't work from now on, because they're simultaneously one and two people, but, like, not the way the writers think.
No,
way the writers want it to be. Yeah.
Also, like, kind of an implication that, like, it's also not a thing they can control, because, like, Bet's like, she, like, had to wake Dot up because, like, I was trapped in there and it was a nightmare. So, like, it appears to be involuntary that, like, you just are. You're, like, tapped into the matrix at all times, which is already has so many implications that are horrifying
also
for Dot and Bet.
Way more understandable that that they would really not want the other one to exist. Like, you know, because that's, like, a lot to deal with. That, I can easily see that developing into, God, I just want there to be one of us so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the closest thing that I think that maybe has, like, foot in real life for, like, explaining how this might feel is, like, I've had pretty bad sleep paralysis episodes since I was a child. And there are many times that now that I'm an adult and know what sleep paralysis is, where I'll be aware that I'm having a sleep paralysis episode, but still the fucked up sleep paralysis stuff is happening. So it's happening, and I'm aware that it's not real, but it is still happening, and I can't stop it. I imagine it's, like, probably kind of similar. And in case you're wondering, it fucking blows. It sucks. And I'm just one person with one sleep paralysis episode. So I can't imagine it's great if that's what happens every time one of you is asleep but not the other one. That seems like it fucking sucks all the time.
Just, like, if there's no barrier even in involuntary information like dreaming, then, like, there's just no way they're not both complicit in any crime. Like, to me, this kind of... Like, if they're interconnected at that level, how do you evaluate
the possibility of one doing a crime without the other doing a crime, right? Like, especially because one attempted to murder the other a few days after their mom was murdered. So, like, how can you not claim they're not both complicit if they share literally every neuron and every synapse? Oh, my God. This becomes such a confusing question of, like, bioethics that, there's a reason I'm glad it doesn't work like this in the real world. Because, holy shit, life would be so fucking hard.
So true. But in the real world, Dot is like, well, you can't hold me accountable for what I say in my dreams. Because Dot is Southern and Bette isn't for some reason. Bette is like, well, you did actually try to kill me like a few days ago. You did stab me. And that's how we got here, actually. That was kind of like the impetus for us ending up here. And then Dot's like, no, I'm going to save my money and find a doctor who one day will do the surgery that will kill you. Okay.
So my theory, by the way, on why one of them has to have more of an accent than the other is it's the same problem that happens in some anime where like two characters are too close in build and have too similar of like voice work. So they have to give them radically different hair colors. It's like that kind of thing here, I think, where it's just like, oh, shit, it's literally the same woman with the same hair. Oh, crap. shit. Well, and we're not good enough at writers to really keep which one's which straight to the audience. So have one of them be a little Southern, I guess.
And so that's where like we get confirmation that like Dot is saying that like not only is she cool with killing Bette, but like she's actively kind of planning on it. Like she's like, one day I will be getting the surgery, and I am cool if it kills you. Do with that information.
Anyway, what do you
want
to do today?
Yeah, you just have to live with that now.
That's like, you know, when you say goodbye to someone and then they're still like, they're walking in the same direction and it's kind of awkward. It's like that times a million because it's your conjoined twin that you said you have to want to murder, but she's with you now always.
Also, hey, remember last episode how there was an exchange where Elsa gave Bette a knife and said you should kill Dot? With this knife.
Oh, yeah.
Dot was awake and, like, could have perceived all of this information, and there's no way she couldn't have, especially if they can perceive each other's, like, motor synapses and stuff, where she, like, grasped the knife. That would be a real easy question to ask your twin, huh? What's that we're holding? Hey, what's that? Not a knife. Give it here. another thing that I just, this is why them perceiving each other's dreams really pisses me off, because like, yeah, we already have multiple plot lines of them trying to like deceive each other and hide information from each other, which is just patently impossible.
Yeah,
because also, what if you involuntarily dream about it? For example, let's say you're Dot and you have a dream about how you would totally be cool with having a surgery that kills your sister and leaves you alive, and then you have to deal with your sister then being like, hey, so about that, and you just go, yeah, that's real, bitch. Fuck, man. Like, how are you supposed to hide anything from each other? Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. That's roughly 20 minutes of the episode that we've covered.
yeah.
And remember, this is our part one of a part one, meaning the good stuff's coming in the second half of our episode. Not theirs. God knows, not theirs. The rest of this episode, there's a musical number. That's not, honestly, that's the rule, not the exception for this season. I forgot. Mm-hmm. We'll get to a musical number. I know that you all are waiting to see how they fuck that up, because they love doing it. They've done it twice so far. And we're on episode, what, 3?
Yes, it's 3, yeah.
Well, next week, a musical number.
I will say, you get to... Hey, there's at least one plot point that I can just say now, and you're going to go, but why? There's going to be somebody who has trouble with getting his dick hard. So look forward to that next time. Why is this a plot point? All right, well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a good one.
Till next time. Oh, bye.